We're back.
Cheers, my brother.
Cheers, sir.
The Original Liberals podcast.
Episode 2.
Yeah, man.
That's right. So today we're going to kind of follow episode 1 with talking a little bit about the current state of American society. We figured it'd be a good start. We'll get a little bit of a kind of a baseline of what we're all about. Good intro topic. So really, you know, everything about American society, what we think's good, what we think's bad,
sure.
Where we're at in this day and age and what that all means. So, I mean, that's kind of, have anything you want to add to that as far as kind of the overall topic of the podcast?
No, I think that's just about it. That's what we're going to go over today. I think part of being an American is, you know, realizing where you came from, and maybe that'll give you an idea on whether you're going in a different direction or going back that way. And I think talking about the current state of things is important. Because if you can't define it, then how the heck do you know where you are and things? And because of that, I think we just want to put our thumb on it as a baseline for yep. everything that we're going to talk about in the future. Because yep. this is important to you, right?
Sure,
this
absolutely.
Is important to me.
Yeah. Something I think about all the time. Like I every day I look around me and I think, you know, where are we compared to where we used to be? Is it good? Is it bad?
Sure.
Are parts of it good? Are parts of it bad? I mean, I think, like everything, there's a little of both. Like,
sure.
Overall, I think it's probably not the greatest. That's just sure. my personal opinion. I don't
sure.
know if you agree with that or not, but, you know, we'll dive into it. So,
and also, too, we want to invite not only discussion amongst ourselves so you can watch us talking. We're really just trying to open up a dialogue on a larger scale, and so you guys can talk with us, talk with each other, anybody you see on the internet, you know, also viewing this and making comments. So it's not just about us, and we just really, I know I find it to be very, very important existentially,
yeah.
because I think a lot of people do. But,
you know, you since you brought up comments, like, sure. I feel like we could start with that. At least me, I think that, one of the big differences between society now and society just a few years, well, maybe not a few years ago, but pre-social media really is, you know, the way people treat each other in an online forum versus the way, you know, you treat each other when on the street, when you meet somebody. And I think that people have far more online interactions now, far less in-person interactions. And that's made people nastier, meaner. That's spilled over into politics, of course. But, you know, not just politics. Everyday life, everything about the way people interact with each other. I think that for the most part, it's been degraded specifically by social media because, you know, of the whole phenomenon of, you know, I'm hiding behind, you know, maybe you're not hiding behind, but it's so easy to just...
The keyboard war.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, me personally, you guys aren't going to find me. You're not going to find me on any social media platforms. Not me.
This like, guy's incognito.
Incognito yeah. until yeah. until last week. So
yeah.
You know, that said, you know, with this podcast, I'm getting out here. I'm spilling it all. Like, I'm going to tell you guys how I feel
sure.
about everything. But you know, what you're not going to find is me commenting on Twitter. You
yeah,
know?
For sure.
I'll give you a full analysis of something, but I'm not going to, you know, put it in a couple sentences and.
Yeah. In any responses you guys might get, it might be from me, but it's more likely to be from our wives. So, so don't say anything too mean because they'll yell at you. But no, actually, it's funny you bring up the online thing is the first thing we talk about in the current mm-hmm. state of America because it is so ever present.
Yeah.
First of all, the first thing that comes to mind for me is hearing Jordan Peterson talk about this specific thing. And he's obviously someone that a lot of people watching us probably know, whether you have good or, you know, bad opinions of him, that's, you know, irregardless. He's a psychiatrist from Canada. And what he said regarding the online thing, which I thought was so interesting, was that the online social rules are different than what you get in real life. There's in real life, the threat of being punched in the face deters the process of narcissism.
Yep.
It doesn't stop it, but it deters it. And some of the other qualities about people that are certainly don't work in the real world.
Yep.
Right? But somehow online, narcissism is rewarded.
Yep.
So you got these Instagram models getting a million likes. And the narcissism, oh my God, bing, 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 bing. All those little chemicals are going off in the brain and maybe even finding some monetary, some money compensation. The more narcissistic and risk-taking you are. So this online online community fosters a whole different social structure that cannot apply to the real world. And what happens in that is the more time you spend in that online world, the more your brain starts to blur what is and is not okay when you've left that world.
Yep.
And what ends up happening, and this is the part that I find most interesting, is it starts to look like a mass psychosis.
Yeah.
Think about that. A mass psychosis that's now bleeding into the real world based off of social media interactions.
For real, for sure, definitely. You ever notice, too, kind of, I don't really know if I would call it the opposite, but, you know, we're talking about how people will say things online they would never say in real life. The opposite, kind of the opposite, I guess, would be people will say something online, get called out for it by millions of people. Like, the truth slips out. They'll say something they actually believe, and then all of a sudden the mob attacks them, and then they retract it. They delete their post. They issue an apology.
Sure.
When we all know, like, I mean, it depends on the individual situation, but I feel like for the most part, that original comment is probably closer to what that person believes.
Sure, it's uncensored like us. You and I are just going off of one take here with no script.
I think of people people like my dad. Dad, if you're watching this, hi, Dad. But my dad's he barely text messages, right?
Sure. Like,
he's proud to leave
Good dude, by the way.
He is great proud. Ben, you met him, yeah. Yep. My dad's proud to leave his phone in his bedside stand for days at a time, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think if I've ever heard him apologize for a stance on something.
Right.
I don't think I have. Okay. And I would venture to say that most people who are disconnected from that world probably don't. Like, you know, you are who you are. You say, you know, you speak things that you believe. You don't ever find it. If you find somebody who disagrees with you, that's one person. Generally, you can have, for the most part, a civil discussion about it and then forget about it. But it's interesting to see how many people are forced to apologize for, you know, a comment or a stance.
There's incredible pressure.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. You might get canceled.
You might get canceled. If you have something on the line and people feel like they can take it from you, and we've all seen the maliciousness you can find online.
Mm-hmm.
And if the people online feel like they can hurt you, if they don't like what you're saying or they just find it amusing.
Yeah, they'll hurt you just for the hell of it.
There's a lot of pressure there for a public official, a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody along those lines that, you know, would be garnering major attention online,
yep.
They have a lot to lose.
Sure.
Which makes them highly compromised.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to follow them and believe what they're saying purely for that reason. Mm-hmm. So you've got them, I think, as far as society is concerned, people look up to celebrities, athletes, and politicians and actors. So they're given this place of unearned authority on subjects that they really, I mean, these are actors. This guy plays, I don't know, everybody loves Keanu Reeves, but he played John Wick. He's not John Wick. Tom Cruise played this role, but he's just Tom Cruise. He's an actor.
Yeah, musicians,
right?
Like.
Musicians, right?
Yeah.
So everybody gives him this unearned influence on a great number of people.
Or athletes. That's.
And then we determined that because of the place that they're in life, they're afraid of losing it all. They're highly compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just saying what they think people will probably want to hear,
mm-hmm.
right? And what people want to hear are sweet lies, not harsh truths.
Yep.
Boy, it's a crazy paradigm. And a lot of times, right?
They're expected to comment on something they may not want to comment about. If you're a celebrity, you are expected to endorse Democrats. You're expected to hate Donald Trump.
Why do you think that is?
It's just part of the mob, I guess.
Part of the mob?
Part of the mob. You know, the media mob that's... Mm-hmm. You know, it's all Hollywood's been liberal forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't.
Is it a collectivist mindset?
Definitely a collectivist mindset.
An individualist, or someone who believes in individual rights, like you and I.
Yeah.
And you know, we're the individual shouldn't be compromised because there's 10 people telling you that your bicycle is theirs. It should be the community bicycle. right?
Yeah.
Like. You know, it's a tough thing, man, because I think that's exactly what it is. Yeah. I think that's what it is, a collectivist mindset. And maybe the internet, talking about its role in society, is also a hive mind collectivist mindset as well, maybe?
Totally.
Yeah?
Yep, for sure. Trying to think, I think a good example is recently with the whole Hamas-Israel situation.
Okay.
You had... It pretty much immediately after that, for the most part, it was all pro-Israel. And then slowly you noticed over the next few weeks, you know, the opposition to that stance started pressuring people into supporting the other stance.
Free Palestine.
All of a sudden it's free Palestine, and if you're not tweeting about it, if you're not posting about it, if you're not publicly supporting Palestine, you know, you're going against the wishes of the mob, and you know.
When you say you, do you mean a celebrity?
I mean the celebrity specifically. Yeah. Maybe not like the individual. Like you know, if you got, you know, somebody with millions of followers who's, you know, they're expected to either get behind whatever the issue is. It's not just that issue. It's whatever the issue is. Or face the wrath.
Sure.
And the wrath can be devastating.
Absolutely.
And that's part of what. You know, that's part of the reason that we are where we are, I think.
We Americans, you mean?
Americans, yeah. Politically at all, politically and socially, where, you know, people are afraid to... I mean, I think there's a lot more people out there that think like you and me than we'll ever admit.
Oh, the silent majority, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The silent mass majority.
Like, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. They're scared.
What you have is the internet has allowed... an echo chamber to be built for every asshole with an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, what happens is, in reality, it used to be that if you came to the table with a really bad idea, a stupid idea, a loony idea, for better or worse, you brought that to the conversation, people would look at you funny and they might avoid you.
Yeah.
Right? So you're feeling socially isolated by what you want to believe.
Yeah.
A lot of times because it's a terrible idea, like flat earth, right? So what happens if you believe in flat earth, then, well, okay, maybe I can't find people in my town or my workplace.
You find them on the internet, it's a guarantee.
But there's other people on the internet. And rather than having to analyze... your ideas and shit test them. Instead of that, you're now finding a group of other people who haven't done those things but will agree with you and give you a confirmation.
Confirmation bias.
And that we're all looking for validation.
I'm guilty of it.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of it. I try not to be, but I know I am. Like I read articles that tend to agree with, you know, I try not to. I try to make sure that I'm, you know, looking at the other side of things. But somebody who's not paying attention to that.
Like, yeah. You know, Well, I think like you and I.
Yeah.
It's my opinion that sometimes the information doesn't matter nearly as much as the principles you use and have within you to obtain information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you have a strong understanding of, let's say, logical fallacies, you know when someone's doing a straw man argument on somebody else, for example. Or if you have an understanding of sociology or psychology, you can see when confirmation bias is kicking in on yourself.
Yeah.
Or kicking in on someone in a news article or on TV.
Yeah.
There's so many different types of biases out there that, you know, for example, appeal to authority bias, which you and I are the opposite of.
I see it all the time. Drives me insane.
Just because someone in an authority position says something, it doesn't mean they're right.
Yep.
But it carries such an overabundance of weight that most people just fall right in line.
Yep.
Which I don't know if that can ever be changed.
No.
But however, it is a huge part of the state of us right now as a nation, especially when we're talking about the online and mainstream media presence.
I think what part of it, what's so hard about it, is figuring out who's in authority when you've got, you know, maybe like sometimes you have to appeal to authority. Sometimes, like, okay, if there's something I don't understand, there's a lot of things I don't understand. I need to rely on people that do understand them and be able to trust that what they're telling me is true. And that's a problem, is that you can't trust so much of what's out there. It's a question of, where do you get information?
Is that why you get multiple opinions on an important surgery before you become any doctor?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
You know, every doctor is an authority.
Mm-hmm.
However, you might get three or four different opinions from three people in the same field on what's wrong with your appendix or your knee or whatever. So it's probably good to do that with our fact checking.
Yeah.
And the things we believe about the world.
Mm-hmm.
But who's really doing that?
Doing the fact checking, or
who's really doing that for themselves?
Or
nowadays they're just running straight to the echo chamber where they can get the confirmation that they want for themselves, affirmation they need.
It's so easy, and that's why I don't know. That's why you have. I think that's part of why politics has become so tribal, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you got one side and the other side, and
do you think it's more tribal now than it was before?
Absolutely.
I think so too.
Absolutely. I think the main thing that's changed about politics in my lifetime is, I remember when I was younger, the main complaint was that both parties are the same.
Okay.
I mean, I heard that all the time, and I felt the same way. It's like, it doesn't matter who you vote for, like with George Bush, John Kerry, you know, like whoever, John McCain, like these are all the Clintons, Bill Clinton, but you know, you think about that era of politicians, or even before then, they were all part of the same secret handshake and asshole club.
Right. Hey, I'm part of that. You vote for Freemasons?
Yeah, no, not those assholes.
Oh, not those assholes. Different assholes. Okay. All right.
No, but like, they're all part of the same club. Nothing's really going to change. Everybody knew that. People were frustrated by that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's forced what we have today. I think a lot of people view it as kind of like, I mean, Donald Trump showed up and made, like, immediately, like, drew a clear distinction.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that, in a certain respect, Barack Obama did the same thing on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was forced by Americans who were generally pissed off about the fact that both parties were exactly the same.
Okay.
And now what we've created is a polar opposite. So there's nobody out there that I know of that's saying, oh, it doesn't matter, Democrats and Republicans are the exact same thing. They couldn't possibly be further from one another.
So that may be true on the political spectrum, or like at least what they do when they pander to the voters.
Yeah.
Right? They might be going to further extremes because the portions of society are becoming more extreme themselves.
Yep.
Therefore, they feel like the path of least resistance towards getting into office is just a pander to them, right?
It is. It is.
So that could be one thing. Or the fact of the matter is that they're still the same. They're still two wings of the same bird, and they're just, and again, it's just pandering.
In a certain respect, yeah, but I think the parts of, like, I don't know, Mitch McConnell just this week decided he's...
The old turtle?
The old turtle's done with the leadership role.
Is he done?
Yeah, he's not. Actually, I don't think he's retiring, but he's done. He's not going to continue his leadership job. Kristen Sinema just retired.
Sure.
You know, these are the old guard, like the ones that were the same. Sure. They're out. Like they're
make room for the new guys.
And the new guys.
Make room for my boy Russell Fry.
Yeah. Hey,
all right.
All right. Yeah.
Russ, what's up, buddy?
Big fans of Russell Fry.
That's right. Yep,
that's right.
No.
But yeah, they're those that old guard is leaving.
Sure.
And they're being replaced with, for better or worse, politicians who are solely in one camp. We'll call them extreme. Yeah, I mean, whatever you want to call them.
What would you consider extreme? Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, Bernie Sanders is absolutely extreme. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the man, don't quote me, but I believe he's actually labeled himself a communist before. I think he's actually used the word.
Well, he did vacation in Russia for his honeymoon.
And then put democratic socialism. I've heard him say that a million times.
And then put some Russian flag on his office wall when he was mayor in Vermont.
Bernie Sanders is insane, but he's endearing. Everybody wants to... Look, if Bernie Sanders showed up at my door, I'd be like, come on in, Bernie.
Yeah, come on in, Bernie. Let's have a talk.
I would interview Bernie Sanders.
Oh, absolutely. For sure.
No, but like...
He doesn't look like he could hurt a fly.
No.
You know?
No, he probably couldn't. But politically, he's absolutely insane.
Sure.
In my humble opinion.
Yeah, of course. But, well, he doesn't understand what causes what. He lives in a world where he's standing in a bucket trying to lift it by its own handle.
Yep.
Right?
Is that
That was
Reagan or was it
Winston Churchill.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Winston Churchill, my man.
Yep.
Cheers to him.
Cheers.
Yes, cheers to him. And
for anybody that doesn't know the quote, I believe I could be wrong about the quote, but I think it's a nation trying to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing on a bucket trying to lift itself by the handle.
By its own handle. Absolutely. Yep. And so what we have is a society that's getting maybe, if you're we're talking about Jordan Peterson's mass psychosis again, maybe getting a little further from being able to deal with reality in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Okay? So, and deal with people in a healthy way.
Yep.
And if there were influence that could use that to its advantage... in governing the nation, they would certainly do that.
Mm.
And they'd certainly steer the direction. And the way they do it is through mainstream media.
Yeah.
So the mainstream media definitely has a role that is much smaller now than ever in the past, which I think... Do you think that's a positive or negative?
Yeah, that's one of the good things about social media.
Absolutely.
I'll give credit where credit's due. It's, you know, thankfully, because these people are insane too. And there's another source of information out there besides the mainstream media, thankfully.
Absolutely.
So,
if you look at, and I don't know what the numbers are, but if you look at CNN numbers, CNN's viewership numbers compared to Joe Rogan's.
Yeah, it's like he's getting like 10 times
the
viewership.
Man, that's so good. I love that
it's
about
it. Beautiful.
That's one great thing about the online. It's wonderful. It's beautiful.
Well, people realize they're being bullshitted, I think.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, I don't know if you saw this last week after the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that Colorado could not kick Trump off the ballot.
Right.
And I didn't get a chance to say it on camera, but I predicted a 9-0 ruling the day Colorado announced that. And,
sure.
I mean, how could you really, like, if you look at it, how could you rule otherwise? So 9-0 in favor of Trump staying on the ballot. And I've listened to I don't know how many different mainstream media talking heads say, no, it was a 5-4 decision.
Really?
Yeah, because of the
doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know that.
Three liberals and I think it was Barrett, but don't quote me on that. The three liberals joined by one of the conservatives wrote a separate opinion, basically affirming the ruling that states can't kick somebody off of a federal election ballot.
Sure,
but the majority.
Mm-hmm.
Their opinion said that basically Congress is the only body that can actually rule on the 14th Amendment, that could pass a law saying based on the Insurrection Act, this person can't be on the ballot. The other four said basically we're not going to take it that far. We're not going to say Congress is the only ones that can do it. However, we affirm the ruling.
Okay.
So it's 9-0.
Well, it doesn't make sense that a federal election wouldn't necessarily be controlled by a state on an individual state
basis. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yep.
But these media talking heads will tell you, oh, it was actually 5-4. It's like, the fuck do these people come from? Like,
they literally don't care anymore, do they?
No, they'll just say
no scruples. There's none.
Yep, none whatsoever.
So and people are starting to realize that. I think the mainstream media, where we are with the mainstream media, is like when people found out that wrestling was fake, but they didn't care and kept watching,
yep.
And they still root for the wrestlers.
Sure.
Okay? So I think that's where we are. And then we've gone, you know, we've progressed. We've gone from three television channels on TV to cable to DirecTV satellite. And now we've moved into streaming and online presence on everything.
Which is now worse than cable, by the way.
Streaming?
Yeah, just totally sidebar. Yeah. You got to subscribe to everything. Unless you're you. It's like, man, well, now there's ads.
Still there.
Man, I can't even put on YouTube anymore without 20-second ads before everything.
True.
It's like, man.
That is true.
And I actually, I told Angela last night, I said, I'm blaming Joe Biden for this. Just like inflation. Like even my time, I can't even watch a YouTube video without watching a 30-second ad.
Well,
not really blaming Joe Biden. I'm just.
Since you bring it up.
Yeah.
Big part of America today is the economy.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's going on? What do you think's going?
Inflation has been high and has come down a little bit, and they're trying to tell you that it's down, even though it's not.
So, what is inflation?
When money becomes worth less, it was already worth less.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
I mean, when shit costs more money and it's more expensive to live.
When it takes more dollars to get the same thing.
Because too much money's been printed and spent. And that's
exactly what it is.
Yep.
Is because the money supply has a fixed value.
Yep.
All right. And for every dollar that's printed, doesn't create new value.
Nope. Just adds an extra dollar.
It just takes value from the other dollars in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a basic concept that really most people, I don't think, get.
No, I don't either.
And there's understandably, you have to. Society is an evolving thing, but there, you know, 1972 we went off the gold standard, right?
Four, I think.
74, whatever it may be.
Either way,
and when you have nothing to actually back the money, and then we print money in a system that we call fractional reserve banking, where literally only a small portion of the money supply has to exist in reality and be deposited to a bank before it can be loaned out, what, 9 times over?
Yep.
And you create a incredible, multi-layered, cheese fondue fountain of debt where nobody actually owns anything until the banks call it all in and they own it all.
Yep.
Right? So, I mean, that's the theoretically where we're at.
Yeah,
and then of course the banks are also the ones saying, "Hey, let's print more."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Why not?
Because why not? If I could print money, I'd print more money.
It's been said that the greatest tax upon the American citizens is the hidden tax, which is inflation.
Yeah, absolutely.
For every dollar you save today, when you go to retire, there's fractions of that dollar left. Mm-hmm. It's gone. It's been taxed out of your bank account without you ever seeing the number change.
Which is why you have to put it in stocks, like risky investments, in order to actually make it keep up, which is...
Yeah, 401ks, things of that nature.
No
that
guarantees there either.
Are kind of a ship rising and lowering with the tides, right? You have to have something to anchor it to the tide, which would be where the inflation level is, I guess. I mean, you can... 401ks... You can buy hard assets like land, stuff like that. Stuff that we think is appreciating because, you know, all of our homes doubled in the last few years.
Ammo. You could buy.
You could buy ammunition.
You could buy ammo. It's a great investment.
Absolutely. I don't know. Well, you might be able to sell that off for more in the future. You're right.
You can
just depending on how things go.
But, you can definitely sell it off for
more in the future. As long as you don't use it up like you and I do.
I use and I stock.
So we know that inflation in the economy is not great no matter what they tell you. I think anybody with...
That's the thing. All you got to do is look around.
And honest money. All you have to do is look around.
They'll tell you. They'll
sit
there. They will. Once again, the mainstream media will tell you everything. They'll put a chart in front of you.
Sure.
Pick out a few metrics. You can make numbers say absolutely anything.
Sure.
I mean, all you need is the right numbers, the right chart. You can point to it and tell
anybody. Absolutely.
But look, all you got to do is look around. And I think most people are looking around. They have to be. You have to be able to see what's going on here. People know that they're not living well right now.
That's right.
I mean,
nobody feels like their wage is keeping up with the increasing costs, first of all. And so what you're doing is you're putting in more hours and getting less in return, even though your bank account looks to be higher, your paycheck looks to be a little bit higher than before. You're actually buying less with it. Mm-hmm. But oops, you just jumped the tax bracket. Yeah. Now you have to pay a higher percentage to the government. Mm-hmm. This is unsustainable.
Of course.
Okay? And I'm not going to go look towards the future in this podcast. That's the next one. But is that unsustainability by mistake or design? And that's something we'll discuss, I think, a little later
sure.
on. Yeah.
I think that whether it's by mistake or design is... I'm not going to say it's not important. It is important because mm-hmm. If it's by design, then we've got some real bad actors that we got to get rid of. If it's by mistake, we've got some real morons that we got to get rid of. Either way, things got to change. But whether it's by mistake or by design, the outcome is going to be the same, which once again, we'll talk about how we feel about that later. It's not good. It's
not good. So we know the economy is not great. Now, smart investors, which are your top people who care about stuff like this, that aren't the average normal folk, know how to, when they see opportunity and everybody else's, you know, misfortune.
Yeah.
So there's smart people out there that are, and that's why you see, you know, they say there's a bigger separation between the haves and the have-nots, which isn't always true, because a 50% increase for someone making $300,000 a year is way bigger than a 50% increase also for someone making $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
So they move up to $75,000, but the $300,000 guy moves up to $450,000.
Yep.
And that's a 50% increase for everybody. So there's just this natural divide.
Which one of those people is more, his life has changed more by that, though, do you think?
Well, that's a great point. Probably the guy getting getting up to $75,000.
Probably.
There's a certain point where money doesn't, as long as you're paying your bills and then you're getting kind of the stuff you want out of life, it's not excessive because, hell, I don't want to be a billionaire, and I don't fault anybody for making billions of dollars.
No hatred.
As long as they're doing it the right way.
Yep.
Without force or fraud. Boy, you know, yeah, you're right. That's a great point.
You know, I had without calling out anybody by name, of course, or saying where I know this person from. Mm-hmm. I had somebody tell me recently that, you know, I'm sure he didn't actually mean this, but mm-hmm. he said all the top 1%, just take them to the guillotine.
Ugh.
He's a liberal.
Of course he is. Right. You know? Right.
But, like, this guy then comes...
You know, he's a neoliberal, by the way. Yeah. We're the liberals.
He's not an original liberal. He's a neoliberal.
Yep.
I know for a fact this guy buys a Powerball ticket every time it hits $500 million.
Of course.
So, like...
Boy.
You know, it's just an interesting concept to hear somebody say something like that. But
uh-huh.
at the same time, you know this person...
To me, someone like
your head's going to be on the block if you hit that number. You know?
I know, right?
So, I actually told him that, too.
That's funny. What did he say?
He didn't have any words for it.
He couldn't rationalize it to you at
literally,
all.
Like,
did he at least have a sense of humor about it?
I hope you don't win that ticket. Yeah, I got a little chuckle
out
of him. But
good. Jeez, man. I generally genuinely feel, that some people feel entirely defeated, and that's why there's so much envy in their philosophy.
Yeah.
And while they, you know, if their Powerball ticket won, they wouldn't be defeated anymore, which is great.
Yep.
But since that's not likely to happen, fuck them, is what they say.
Right.
There's a politics of jealousy in the neoliberal, and it's been said that about socialism and communism, is that we don't want to have unequal outcomes. We want an equal society, right?
Yeah.
And it's purely politics of jealousy.
Yep.
It is purely a belief that, boy, look at all this food we have at our supermarkets. Look at all the gasoline we have at our pumps. Look at how much abundance we have. And then look at how much they have and then we don't.
Yeah.
Right? Everything should be free because there's so much of it, never realizing how it got there and put on the table.
It's a belief that a dollar in somebody else's pocket is one less dollar in your pocket, which is bullshit.
That's called the fixed pie fallacy. Yeah. Yep, and that's bullshit. You're exactly right. Actually, well, my friend, I think we need to go to break.
Let's do it.
And we'll be right back with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
wetter for the wear. Went out there and had a quick smoke break.
Smoking in the rain.
And got a couple little raindrops on us, but I think we're doing all right anyways.
Yeah.
We'll get back to this. And actually, where I want to get back to is actually going right back to the economy we were talking about. A very interesting part of the economy right now is the potential for cryptocurrencies.
Yep.
And there must be strong potential because I guess, who was it? Was it JP, was it Morgan?
I don't know.
That did an IPO recently. There was they filed on the last day of 2023, and it was approved semi-recently, where they're, not IPOs, excuse me, where they have created a new way to sell cryptocurrencies in their arena, and Bitcoin has blown up of recent. Have you seen the highs?
I have not, no. What's that?
69,000 per Bitcoin?
Unbelievable.
Have you ever bought Bitcoin?
Yeah,
before?
I've had some Bitcoin.
I've had some too. I wish I hadn't sold it.
Last time I sold it, I think it was like 15.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nuts.
Yep. Boy, there's so many guys back in 2010 who maybe, I think there was a libertarian movement thing because they were hearing about this through the Ron Paul channels, was this thing called Bitcoin that could be this freak, you know, this this liberty currency that wouldn't be able to be centralized, right?
Yeah.
So guys were buying Bitcoin for 10 cents, 25 cents, 40 cents a piece and paying for their pizza with it. And lo and behold, had they kept them, they'd have a few mil in the bank right
now.
Think about that. Or more. Yeah.
What you spent on a pizza.
Yeah, it's wild where that's gone. But
yeah, I don't know. Personally, I don't really truly understand cryptocurrency. I'm fascinated. Like, I understand the basics.
Okay.
The idea. I don't have a in-depth understanding of it, which is probably why I never bought much and why I sold what I had, because I don't really like to have things that I don't really understand. So,
sure.
I mean, I understand that it's finite. I understand that it's uncontrolled by governments. That alone is incredibly fascinating.
Absolutely.
Never really understood the whole mining thing and how it's...
Well, there are certain algorithms that computers have to do, these increasingly intense mathematical computations. It's just like if you were mining gold, the first nuggets are the easiest to find. But essentially, you have to go deeper and deeper into the earth, and there's only a finite amount of gold, which is why it's always been a great standard for currency, right?
Yeah.
So they use that analogy and applied it to digital currency. And as gold is mined, or as the Bitcoin is mined, or any other cryptocurrency, or some of the other cryptocurrencies,
It becomes more difficult
until one day the final Bitcoin will be mined.
Yeah.
So I think that's the premise behind that. Now, again, I probably only understand it maybe a smidge more than you do.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, if you guys have interesting comments on that, please leave them for us and others, because we can learn a lot more about that too. I feel like it's going to be a big part of the future. But again, that's for a different podcast in the future. We're talking about right now. And do you feel like the economy, the people who run the economy are giving their consent to it? I think they are.
Their consent to,
I think they fought it. Yeah. I think they fought it for a long time, and then they know the writing's on the wall.
I don't see that, but maybe I'm missing something.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't see them wanting to give up control.
Right.
You know, the ability
maybe
to print.
Maybe they figured out how to control it, and that's the thing.
We'll never figure out how to print it because of what you just said.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an important part of who they are is
there's a lot of things
endlessly
that
printing
yeah,
money.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I don't know about it. I wish I could give better answers to. I know intuitively I think there's a Bitcoin halving coming up, which would seem to go against the principle of not being able to mine more, considering that they've already got it down to the fractions of a Bitcoin. And each small, little, tiny, minuscule fraction is called a Satoshi, named after the man who the anonymous man who apparently invented it.
Yeah.
If you really believe there was a man who invented it at all, I don't know.
There's We've a lot, talked a little bit about
yeah,
that
there's,
before.
There's different theories on that. However,
that could be a whole podcast too, because
the story is that after the 2008... economic issues. Someone frustrated during that period of time, you know, this was the time of Occupy Wall Street.
Yep.
And a brilliant person out there somewhere decided that he was going to create the alternative, which is, I love that spirit. That's super cool, right?
It's super cool.
And boy, this guy, I don't know, he definitely intended to do it. And boy, it's gone from in 13, 14 years to being 70,000 of Bitcoin.
That's insane. What's the all-time high? Is it?
That was the all-time high. I think prior to that was a few years back. It was 64.
Okay.
And then it dropped all the way down to 15.
Yeah.
Maybe more, maybe a little less.
Be about where I sold mine at.
Ah, the old buy high, sell low strategy, huh?
Yep. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't that great at it either myself. Yep. I tried. But the problem with me is I wanted to day trade it.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to see if I could, you know, figure out the game.
Yeah.
And I think anxiety peaked from watching it too much.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why day trading is usually a losing proposition. Not always, but you know, I've... Do you know anybody that's ever got rich day trading? I know a lot of people
who've
tried it.
Do I know anybody? I don't think so.
No, me neither.
No. I know someone who bought a bunch of Shiba Inu at the right time and then bought himself a Winnebago with it. But other than that's awesome. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. He's living on some land out there now in his little Winnebago and kicking life. He's got a little Shiba Inu. Shiba Emu? Inu?
I don't know, man.
It's not an emu. I think it's a dog. But
we're going to call it emu. I like that.
Yeah, the Shiba Emus. On a little symbol on his wall in there as a reminder how he got that thing. That's pretty cool. Well, you know, that's one portion of our current, you know, landscape in America. Another one is our international relations. Yep. And how do you feel about that right now?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
There's a lot, huh?
For starters, the obvious thing is that... I don't know how obvious it is, but... Pax Americana has ended.
What's Pax Americana?
The American... Have you ever heard of the term Pax Romana?
No.
It's the Roman peace. When Rome got so powerful that they essentially stopped all major conflict in the world.
Okay.
That it just didn't permit it. Like, it was, you know, the Greek city-states are not going to fight each other. You people are not going to fight. Like,
everybody,
the wars are going to end because...
We had been unified. Or they had been unified.
Yeah, even if they're not unified, the Romans were not going to tolerate the... Okay. How that affected trade.
Okay.
You know, for them, you know, they stopped all the major wars. So that term is a lot of times applied to the American peace, which would be what started in 1945.
Okay.
That period where there was no major conflict, you know, after World War II, where, you know, we were the sole, well, not the sole, obviously there was the Soviet Union, but you had a, you know, two superpowers in the world that didn't want to cause, you know, the end of humanity as we know it. So we kind of silently agreed not to nuke each other. So, and then, of course, you got the fall of the Soviet Union and America being the sole superpower.
Sure.
You've got a situation where, for the first time in 2,000 years, there were no major, like, you think about
major
before World War II, it was normal for major, for great powers to fight each other on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
That didn't happen, and that's, I think, ending, you know, with, you got the Russia-Ukraine thing.
Okay.
Not that I would call that a major, like, it's not a world war.
It's affected our economy, though.
Oh, it certainly has, and I think it's going to get worse. I think it's the beginning of the end of the Pax Americana. I think we've weakened to a point where...
Good concept. Pax Americana, okay.
Sure.
But
go ahead. We've weakened to a point where we're no longer enforcing the peace.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're going to see, I don't know how soon, I thought it was going to happen already, though. I thought that China would already overtake Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. North Korea is getting more hostile. You know, there's a lot of stuff simmering. You've got the Hamas-Israel thing, which is, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, conflict in the Middle East is new. You know?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of people, and when you look into it, and this I shouldn't say a lot of people. I believe that the Palestine, boy, this might be controversial.
Probably. You said the word Palestine, so anyway.
Palestine is acting as a proxy for Iran.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
So if you're pro-Palestine right now, you're pro-proxy to Iran.
Yeah.
And Iran is definitely not hip hip hooraying at America's success.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
All right. So we've got that going on. Like you said, North Korea could go south into, I mean, they're a nuclear power, right?
Yeah, they've got.
Okay.
I don't know how many nukes. Yeah, they've got nukes.
and they presumably have the backing of China.
Yeah.
Which is a big superpower, of course. And South Korea is a prospering nation, right?
Yeah, with the backing of the United States and the rest of the West.
Boy, I think South Korea probably produces a lot of the products we use.
Yeah.
So that could affect us there.
I mean, it could affect us. We could get pulled into... I think that World War III could happen tomorrow. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
I think that
right.
this whole situation could just jump off. Like,
sure.
You know, they talked about the powder keg before World War I. Like,
okay.
I mean, that was the Balkans. I don't know what the powder keg of the world is now. It's all over the place.
It could jump
off in any...
I think the difference between then and now that is going to keep us in more of a neutral area is that what occurred after World War II is we all became a more interconnected world.
Yeah.
Economically.
Yeah.
And when you take out your enemy, you may actually be hurting yourself economically as well. And that is definitely as true today as it's ever been before.
Yeah.
So that might be one of the things that's holding this all together right now is the fact that we are so interconnected on an economic level globally that to act aggressively may actually be your own downfall economically.
Yeah, if it's calculated correctly, if somebody makes a one miscalculation, that could all change. It takes, you know, who knows, who the hell knows what Kim Jong-un's thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what Xi Jinping's thinking? You know, it takes one major war. I mean, you saw, did anybody think Putin was going to invade Ukraine? Until he started lining up at the border.
When he started lining up at the... In all honesty, he talked about doing it for a long, long time and
sure,
gave a lot of warnings.
Yeah, he did, but nobody really thought he was going to... I mean, somebody probably thought he was going to do it, but I sure didn't. And
right.
No most one, people didn't think about it.
Not
and
in
then
the United
it,
States, we didn't know.
And then it happened, and it was this major event. And I don't know, it's the whole thing's interesting to me because I guess ideologically, I'm an isolationist. I would love for the United States to sit back, do our own thing.
Sure.
Not interfere in world affairs.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's kind of almost a basic libertarian thing. At least for me, it is.
Yeah.
However, this is kind of where my libertarian philosophy differs from what I want to see happen in real life because
okay.
I recognize that if America pulls back, somebody else is going to run the show.
Creates a vacuum.
Yeah. I don't know who's going to run the show, but I would prefer if somebody's running the world that it be us.
Isn't that the messed up thing about it, though?
Yeah.
Is that we never should have done it in the first place because of the blowback that we should have known would occur if we ever pulled back out.
Yep.
So it becomes one of those things where a pound of prevention or an ounce of prevention would have been well more than a pound of cure.
Mm-hmm.
And as a libertarian, you have to balance what we feel is ideal and right with the actual consequences of actions after the problems have already been occurred. And it would take someone with incredible couth to pull us out back slightly enough over the course of time in the right way, letting the air back in to fill the missing space when we've removed ourselves.
Yep.
Now, I don't think that will ever happen.
I don't either.
We're going to have to play policeman.
Yeah.
In order to stay there. And that's all police, I'm going to quote a Bush song, all police are paranoid. All right? And we're paranoid, man.
Yeah.
We are paranoid, brother. And that's a scary place to be because paranoia for an individual or a nation is not the positive, creative, constructive place we need to be at.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So, yeah, I guess I don't really... We just have to watch it play out and find out.
Yeah, it'll be fun, won't it?
Hopefully.
Yeah. That's why, you know, it used to be that preppers, American preppers, were considered crazies.
Yeah, no, it's... If,
now everybody's a prepper.
If you're not prepping a little bit, you're crazy. I mean,
now, if you're not prepping a little bit, you're just... say you don't care. You just don't care.
Yeah, I think the illusion that nothing could ever jump off is slowly dying, rightfully so,
sure.
Because...
Well, we were talking about biases earlier. There's something called in psychology called normalcy bias. Mm-hmm. People tend to believe that what's been normal for them will always continue to be the case.
Yep.
Which, you know, you could see it in effect in, let's say, the rise of Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what it was going to become. There's just a normalcy. They believed there was going to be a normalcy that occurred to them, and then that all, poof, gone.
Yep.
Right? And I'd hate to think as Americans that could happen to us.
It could happen to anybody.
It could happen to anybody.
I mean, Hitler convinced an entire country
mm-hmm.
to rally behind him. He didn't do it with military.
That's right.
He didn't stage a coup.
Mm-hmm.
He used the political system that was in place to gain the backing of an entire country. And did what he did, which mm-hmm. is just crazy to think about. But it just goes to show you how not maybe the word's not gullible, but how... what's the word I'm looking for? Easily influenced people are. Easily
manipulated people are. The society at whole.
Yeah.
You know, they were the master propagandists, the Nazis were.
Yep.
And Joseph Goebbels was their propaganda man. And he's had plenty of very interesting quotes that I can remember. One of them being the bigger the lie you tell and the more you tell it, the more people just want to believe it. You know?
It's true.
And it's really true. Mm-hmm. You make this grandiose, almost absurd lie, but you say it
over
repeatedly
and over again
from a place of power,
mm-hmm.
and people just go with it and they believe it.
Isn't that terrifying?
That is terrifying. But, you know, if you don't, it's like Carl Jung said with a famous psychologist. He said that, you know, if you don't make the unconscious conscious, it'll rule your life and you'll call it fate. All right. So people are out there just trying to make they're having more pressure than ever to make and get their house payment made and their yep. car payment made and their kids fed.
Mm-hmm.
And then by osmosis, they're absorbing all of this atmospheric bullshit. Right?
Yeah.
And they're just going along with it. And you can't blame them when you look at it on that level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it is. And that's the state we're in right now.
They're just trying to survive.
The harder it is... here's another quote. I love throwing out those quotes. I'm on a roll now. Sun Tzu's Art of War. If you feed your army enough just for the next day's meal, they'll fight for the next one for you. All right? You can tell them whatever you want, and they'll fight for the next day's meal. You just feed them for that day. Just get them as poor as possible. And they're incredibly manipulatable.
Yeah.
Boy.
Crazy, man.
Boy, I don't want to be all negative in this podcast because I think there's a lot of positives too in America.
We talked about that during the break a little bit. We're you know, kind of talking about what Ben just said. We don't want to be all negative. And there are positives, but at least me, it's hard for me because I've always been an optimistic person. I have an optimistic personality. I'm optimistic about my life.
We're positive people.
You run into me on the street I'm as optimistic as anybody you're ever going to meet, but I am pessimistic, and this has happened to me over the years. I'm short-term optimistic, I'm long-term pessimistic. I always tend to believe that
mm-hmm.
at least within my lifetime,
mm-hmm.
everything's going to be okay. Like, I can fix whatever situation
I'm the opposite.
Across. Are you really?
I am short-term pessimistic, long-term optimistic.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm the guy that thinks that, like, I'm going to make it all work. Everything's going to be great. And then maybe in 100 years,
no,
we're all going to disappear.
I'm completely optimistic of myself, personally.
Okay.
Right?
So
I thought you were talking about society.
No, I am. I'm talking about both. So you're short-term you're short-term pessimistic
for
about
society.
So you think we're going to take a sudden nosedive and then come through.
We've been on that trend, yes.
I think that we're going to... I hope we can figure it out short-term. Uh-huh. But, you know, I always say... I do always say this to it. I mean, long term, it depends on how long term you go out. But eventually, if mm-hmm. you know, if you believe the prevailing scientific theories, the universe is going to end in heat death. So
right in about 24
billion years.
Yeah.
Or so. Yeah. So eventually, like, it's all going to crumble. Eventually, it's just a question of how soon. So
sure.
Yeah.
Well, everything comes to an end eventually, right?
Yep.
But every ending is a new beginning.
Yeah.
Which is the optimistic part. For
yeah.
me. Like. I'm a believer in something that you might find online called the Titler cycle.
Okay.
And it's essentially a flow chart that goes in a circle and that goes from different points in society
mm-hmm.
where the sentiment changes over time. There's a, you know, each one becomes an action
creates the reaction, which creates the next
action.
I think you go through that circle.
Yeah, okay.
And if you follow the Titler cycle, I believe we're in a place of apathy right now.
Actually, I think you were the one that showed
me. I probably was.
All right, so
And we're going to end up going to, according to them, going from a place of apathy to dependence, mm-hmm. to subjugation, to faith, to mm-hmm. prosperity again. We're kind of on that curve right now.
So what has to happen for us to get there? Does America have to collapse?
Boy, you can't... when you're building a house and you've lived in it for a long, long time, you either make the necessary upgrades over the time to keep the structure strong, mm-hmm. or you ignore that leak in the roof, which causes all the wood and water damage, right? Yeah. And when that happens, what do you have to do? You have to reframe it.
Sure.
You have to go back to the bones.
What if you just keep borrowing money against it?
Keep borrowing money against it
until you can't pay it back anymore.
Yeah. And then let it go into foreclosure?
Seems...
Boy, China's going to love their new foreclosure. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, jeez, man. So, you know, again, you don't want to be all negative in this.
But I
think this is a perfect precursor to our next episode, which is going to be about the future of America after we've now addressed the past, stated the present,
mm-hmm.
and then extrapolated trends.
I'm looking forward to the futurism episode because here's the thing that's fun about futurism is nobody knows what the hell is going to happen, so nobody can call you out. You can't get it wrong.
That's right.
You can make predictions and...
And if you get it right, then you have it on a podcast.
Yeah,
then you're a legend.
If you get it wrong, you're just some other asshole that predicted the future. It's great. So, yeah.
Just another asshole.
Turn us into Nostradamus.
I do believe that if you look throughout, going back through all human history, technology has always been our greatest friend. Okay? With the technology to invent the wheel.
Yeah.
It's been our way towards survival.
Yep.
Okay?
Or just to put a seed in the ground.
Yeah,
simply to grow
exactly.
food.
Yeah. And that's technology. And our technology has become more and more complicated and more in depth
mm-hmm.
over the course of time. But I think we're living in a time right now with many possibilities in the technological fields.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the whole global warming thing may very well not be as much of an issue in the future as many people worry about, because carbon emissions will be cut due to not killing 200,000 cows in Ireland like they want to, but because someone invented the next step in the proper technology for the advancement of humanity.
I was just going to say, I'm going to make a bold prediction right now that it won't be because of government regulation.
It never has been. It never has been.
Yep.
Well, think about it. The man who invented the flash drive saved more trees than Greenpeace ever could.
That's awesome.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've never heard that said before, but yes, like I can tell you.
We have a world where we still at least have some incentive and some hope, where if we work hard, or we invent something, or we bring something new to the table, or we bring our talents to help other people, we can still advance in our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter how bleak the economy may look, if you're a smart man, smart woman, with a talent or something to give to society,
mm-hmm.
you can still have a plane and a boat and three houses and eight girlfriends and everything.
That's something special.
And that's always been the prime mover of advancement. Because I think for 2,000 years, when we had the popes and the kings and everybody were just literally subjects to the king, we had almost no technological advancement except in the military.
I'm living better in this room right now than any pope or king.
Yep.
You know,
John Rockefeller could not have held a candle to the way you live right now.
No, and I'm sitting here bitching about it.
The standard of living is so much greater now in this very moment than it's ever been.
It is,
and we need to be thankful for that, my man.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So that's really great, and I don't think that's going to change either.
I hope not,
unless people give it away. Eat the bugs, as they say, right?
Yep.
You know, what was Darth Vader over the World Economic Forum? You know, did you hear about this?
No.
where he believed that cricket protein was going to be the best way for people to get nourishment in Europe in the future. Eat the bugs. You never saw the Darth Vader? Oh, man. Yeah. Darth Vader with the helmet off. Yeah, he looked exactly like that guy. He had a weird, oh, my God, dressed like him and everything. He's like, is this dude really a James Bond villain or not? I mean, he's trying to be? But anyways, so what you have is international influences that don't give a rat's ass about America. And frankly, they may see a strong America on the international level right now as an impediment to their world government plans.
I'm going to go one step further and say not just international influences, you've got American influences. You've got people in our, not just people, you have a massive faction of neoliberals in this country who believe the exact
progressives. Same thing. They're progressing us, right, yes.
Who believe the exact same thing, whose entire goal it is to destroy America and American influence.
Why do they hate America? Why do you, if that's the case, what's the motivation?
Money and power, I guess. Okay. It's got to be money and power.
Personal gain?
Yeah, personal gain. They want to stay in the secret handshake club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where their agenda is based on that, and, you know, it doesn't jive with, you know, the stuff we believe in. So they'll destroy it.
Absolutely.
And those people are here. Those are, a lot of those people are your congressmen, they're your senators.
Mm-hmm.
Your president doesn't know. He has no idea.
None. No clue.
No clue. But the people who are running your president.
Yeah.
I truly believe they're hellbound on destroying. You know, that's another thing. Since the podcast is about the modern state of American society, and I think we touched on it earlier a little bit, but the division. I know we touched on the division, but we've got two sides. Both of them believe the other side's an existential threat to the country.
Because of the extremist nature of things.
The neoliberals absolutely believe that what they call the MAGA Republicans are out to destroy America. They believe that, I don't know if the people at the top believe that, but they've convinced a lot of people that, that that's the case. And it's not sustainable when you've got two sides that both...
They're so polar. We're not all Americans anymore.
There's probably a... I don't even know if it's a majority. I would love to see a poll on this. What percentage of people believe that if the other side wins, American democracy's over?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they both believe that the other side is trying to end the republic.
So what you're telling me is rather than being an American first, they're liberal. They're Democrats first. Or they're Republicans first.
I was
going to
say,
then Americans.
We won't stop it at Democrats because there's a lot of people who are...
Yep.
You know, on the right that are the exact
absolutely,
same way.
Absolutely, for sure.
And that's not good either. It's,
incredibly divisive.
Yeah,
a house divided is sure to fall, right?
Yeah. No, I tend to align myself more with the right's ideology, being a libertarian.
Because
you're
governmentally it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, with my social views, we talked a little bit about this on the first podcast, I think that traditionally libertarians have gotten, there was a time when I would tell people I'm a Republican when it comes to money, I'm a Democrat when it comes to social issues.
Yeah.
Let me do what I want, keep your hands out of my pocket.
Absolutely.
But I can't even say that anymore because the liberals, the left has gone so far off the deep end on even their social issues, like
because they progressed into wanting the government to influence power over its political adversaries, not only on the political arena, but also the people who represent their political adversaries.
Yeah,
they're constantly want to use because government is essentially the legalized use of force.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
So I can't do certain things to you because we both have individual rights.
Mm-hmm.
However, if the government decides that it's legal to do so, they will go after you, throw you in a cage. Imagine if your girlfriend told you that if you don't give her half of your money and report everything to her of what everything you do, that she has the right to throw you in a cage.
Pretty crazy.
And imprison you, right?
Pretty
your girlfriend
crazy.
Can't do that to you, right?
No.
Unless you want her to. However, these people with magic hats that we sometimes elect and sometimes don't elect, meaning bureaucrats,
yeah,
decide when that's okay and when that's not. Now, that's actually a necessary evil on a small level.
You have
level.
To be able to put some people in cages
you
sometimes.
You have to be able to protect people from one another. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to do it. But the problem is when it becomes politicized.
Yep.
And they're starting to chase after people not for actually imposing on somebody else's rights, but for what they're thinking.
Yeah.
They believe something I don't like.
I'm watching it happen. I'm watching it happen before my eyes. I'm telling you, it's gotten so much worse in the past couple of years.
And this is
it
progressivism.
Terrifies me, yes.
This is progressivism. Right?
It terrifies
One
me.
One thing I will say about the right-hand side is that I don't think they really care what the other side thinks. They don't want to police their thoughts. I haven't seen that sentiment firsthand, unless I'm wrong.
You're saying that the right does not want to police the left? No, they
don't. Think so.
I don't think so either.
I think they've tried to police other things in the past, like pornography, sinful things, things that align with Christian values that
yep.
they don't like, and they want to impose their Christian values on society,
which
is akin, really.
I'm telling you, I oppose that as much as I oppose
absolutely
imposing religious views on somebody as much as I oppose anything the left's doing right now.
Listen,
absolutely.
They're both the same.
Yeah.
They both believe in a large, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving, will take care of you mm-hmm. entity that sees and knows everything. But if you don't follow its rules, you're either going to hell or prison.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between the left and the right.
Yeah.
One side believes the government should throw you in prison. The other side believes that God should throw you in hell. They're the exact same thing.
Yep.
Okay? And this is where you and I don't follow
their
paradigm.
In.
We don't follow their paradigm. But everybody else seems to.
Yeah.
And that's a nation of people
it's
live in.
It's easy to fall into.
Yeah.
It's really easy to... It's easy to say people who don't agree with me are wrong and they should be punished for it. That's
mm-hmm.
easy. And you've got other people egging you on. And
sure.
Yeah. And this is what you end up with. And I don't know how... I don't know how from here we lower that temperature. I can't believe I just said I hate the term lower the temperature. It's one of
okay.
those things that... But I just said it.
But it works.
I'll say it again.
It makes sense.
How
yeah.
do we lower the temperature? How do we get to a point where we're not... Where we don't have to worry about, you know, politicized justice systems and...
Sure.
Right now I believe the left has politicized
expand.
The justice system, but I believe...
Expand upon that right there. The politicized justice system.
Okay. Donald Trump has been charged with, what, 92
mm-hmm.
crimes?
Mm-hmm.
The man's never been charged with a crime in his life. They just started prosecuting him last year. That is, you've got DAs that ran campaigns based on prosecuting Donald
Trump. Yep.
They fined him $400 million for a fraud that had no victim.
Right.
Yeah.
Victims.
For doing what every real estate developer does, for inflating the value. Like
absolutely.
Okay. Whether you like him or don't, or you don't, you either if you've looked into what they're doing to him, you either agree that they've politicized the justice system, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
or you're lying to yourself.
Mm-hmm. How did they politicize it?
They're doing this specifically because he's running for president.
But how did they politicize it? How do we get to this point?
Activist
judges were appointed.
Well,
to...
activist judges, activist DAs.
It's been said that they realized the money spent on federal elections from the billionaires
yeah.
wasn't nearly as efficient as if you go to the lower courts
yeah.
or you go to the local levels and state levels and start putting activist judges on that level.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you talk about certain circuit courts which are flagrantly activist.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that judges cannot be activists.
No.
They are purely there to interpret the law.
That's what they should be, but they don't. And let me tell you, it's
gonna, how did that change?
It's going to flip. It's going to flip because right now they're persecuting Trump, and I do not want to see. I don't want to see Joe Biden prosecuted when he leaves office.
Of course
either.
Not. That's banana republic bullshit.
Yep. I don't want to see Nancy Pelosi prosecuted.
No,
I don't
let
see
him
Mitch
fade.
McConnell. It doesn't matter who it is. You name your politician.
Let him fade into obscurity, just like John. What's his name with his brain tumor? John McCain. Let him fade with his
yeah.
brain tumor, all right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I'm pretty sure Donald Trump gave that picture of the brain tumor a Medal of Honor
yeah.
when he was gone, all right?
Yeah.
All right? Yeah, I told you, know, oh, I'm making fun of a dead man. Well, guess what? He was an asshole.
Trump
Fuck
already
that guy.
Did it.
Fuck that guy. Trump already did it.
Trump
right?
already did it.
Yeah.
And his best buddy, Lindsey Graham.
He pretended to be a righty just like Mitt Romney did.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, the whole old guard of the Republican Party, is they make me sick. But
That's why the mainstream media was fine with guys like John McCain.
They loved him.
And Mitt
Romney. Do
you
remember how much they loved John McCain until he won the nomination? They were all about John McCain when he won the nomination. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, he was evil.
Donald Trump had a TV show on NBC until he went for the nomination.
I know. Yeah, it's insane. Totally insane. But yeah, we've reached this point of insanity, and we got to figure out how to get back to... Because it's scary. It's scary. Like, when politicians start being prosecuted politically, it's terrifying. So
they're going after citizens who are protesting at the Capitol.
Yeah, they call it an insurrection.
Now, labels and words have meanings.
Why do you think they call it an insurrection?
For the same reason they took our name. They took our name, liberals, because they got found out, and they know the label makes a difference. So they just stole our name so they could disguise themselves. They're constantly moving goalposts.
They started saying the word insurrection almost immediately.
Yeah, it was told to them as a narrative. This will be your narrative. This is the word to use.
Why do you think they use that word?
Because it implies treason.
I think they specifically use that word because of the wording of the 14th Amendment. I think some asshole...
Oh, okay.
Some asshole was behind the scenes as it was going on, finding a reason to prosecute, and then found the insurrection clause.
Okay.
And says, called all his buddies and was like, insurrection. That's how we're going to stop. They were trying to stop Donald Trump from running in 2024 before they had those rioters rounded up.
They were dumb.
They were rioters. And let's be fair, when that was happening, when the Capitol riots were happening, I was cursing these people. I was sitting here like...
Really?
Yeah. I still think they're idiots. Sit on... get your feet off of Nancy Pelosi's desk.
Listen, the Tree of Liberty must be refreshed with the blood of tyrants every so often. That's all I have to say. All right?
Yeah,
that's a Thomas Jefferson quote. He wrote the fucking Constitution.
Yep.
All right?
Yep.
My son's middle name is Jefferson after that son of a gun. All right?
Love it.
Let's refresh the Tree of Liberty every once in a while. That's all I have to say.
I agree with that, but the January 6th thing was immature.
I didn't mean that literally, by the way. Just anyways, go ahead.
It didn't help anybody. It didn't help anything. They only had something to lose. They had nothing to gain.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was stupid. I thought it was silly. I thought they should all be prosecuted. I think some of the sentences are insane, however.
Sure.
Like, you can't just, especially after you've seen some of these videos where they're just like, this was not a violent insurrection. Mm-hmm. These were a bunch of morons that shouldn't have been inside the Capitol.
I tend to agree.
I joke
around, but I tend to agree.
They called it an insurrection almost immediately because they were looking forward to this moment right here where we're at right now, which was, we're taking him off of the ballot because he's an insurrectionist.
I know.
It's crazy.
Well, they obviously haven't planned out that well considering... It looks like there's a giant vacuum at the head of their party right now.
Yeah.
The respectable Democrats, the Tulsi Gabbards, in my opinion, and you don't have to agree with me.
No, sure. I respect Tulsi Gabbard.
The Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Those should be the people leading that party right now.
Yeah.
But they're also the people that won't take orders lockstep.
Agreed. And
leaders are gone.
To play devil's advocate, there's a lot on the other side that say the exact same thing about, you know, Lindsey Graham or Mitch McConnell. Well, maybe not Mitch McConnell. Nobody likes Mitch McConnell.
No. Fuck that turtle.
I mean, yeah. There's a lot of them saying the same thing about, you know, maybe the Republican Party should be led by Nikki Haley, for example, you know?
Right.
So... it kind of goes both ways,
I guess. With that said, I think we've had a good conversation about our you know, where we're at on things right now. I think there's a lot more we could have gone into, but I think that's something that we'll bleed over in the future podcasts.
Yep.
And we'll make more coherent points, you know, going into the future.
Yep.
But for now, I think it's time to wrap things up. Our next episode is going to be about, you know, and really a continuation of this, which is going to be the future of America in our estimation, and maybe some of the issues and potentials and possibilities that we could see coming to fruition in the next 15, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 years. Who knows?
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right, my brother.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, thanks for a great podcast, brother.
Thanks, guys. Bye.